So the work we do here is to become aware of how we get in our own ways. We look at the ways that we turn against ourselves. We look at the ways that we believe our stories, that we believe our minds, that we're convinced something is truly wrong. And usually it's us that's wrong. I notice this in myself mostly in the middle of the night. When I wake up, or what my friend Elizabeth calls middle of the nightism, where I wake up and I'm usually up a couple of times in the night, but usually it's the third time in the night, it's usually around 3 o'clock, where I get up and there's a kind of, I didn't, I should have, I can't believe, I left that out, oh my goodness. And I'm convinced every night. And every night it's something else. Actually, it didn't happen last night. It doesn't happen every night. But when it does happen, there's a believing of my story. Just really believing the story of me. The story of me. And how I did it wrong. And what I am more and more doing is realizing, yeah, that's what happens every night. And every night it's something else. And so it's the pattern, not the content, that I've started getting most interested in. Oh, there's a pattern here. Ah, I'm believing my mind. And often I do with myself what I just suggested you do. I imagine that part of my mind is gone, and if that registers the universal paradigm, there's a way it should be. This isn't it, and someone is to blame. There's a way it should be. This isn't it, and someone is to blame. And most often, well, not for everybody, it's ourselves that we blame. The way we turn against ourselves. So this work that we do is about becoming more and more and more aware of these ridiculous stories we tell ourselves about who we are and what we need to do. Recently, a friend suggested I do a ketamine infusion. And I was quite interested in what it would be like. I didn't really get into drugs when I was in my 20s and 30s. And I thought, okay, now's a chance for me to have a psychedelic experience with an MD sitting there. And so I did. And it was lovely. It was lovely. All that happened was that it kept flashing across the screen of my mind, nothing is wrong. It's all good. Things like that. It was great to dissolve the mind and not have a body. I didn't really have a body. It was great. But then, as you know, what happens every time? Well, first of all, afterwards, I felt quite ill. But that was an experience. And can I refer to it? Do I remember that I realized that nothing was wrong? I think there were two things. Nothing is wrong and it's all good. Those were the main messages. That, you know, Eckhart Tolle flew in for a little while, which was very sweet. He didn't have a chest. His heart was wide open, and my heart was wide open, and we bumped and merged hearts. It was very sweet. That was lovely, because what isn't lovely about merging hearts with Eckhart Tolle? So it was all lovely. It really was. It was wonderful, and it was an experience. And experiences come and go. And that ended. And so I am, sometimes I think about it, and, you know, when I'm convinced something is wrong and I remember what I saw and what I knew then, which is that nothing is wrong. But really what our work is about living that moment to moment, day to day. Really getting it that no matter what is going on, there's a way through. And the way through is by working with the stories that we tell ourselves. There's a wonderful Nietzsche quote, "There are no facts, only interpretations." There are no facts, only interpretations. And which reminds me of the Gabor Mate statement that trauma isn't what happened to you, it is what you make of what happened to you. It's how you interpret what happened to you. And so what is making all of us miserable when we're miserable is how we're interpreting it. It's how we're interpreting it. What we tell ourselves about it, which can end at any moment. That which we tell ourselves, the stories, poof. I can feel that in the middle of the night. Suddenly I'll think, well, what if I didn't have a mind right now? All that would be going on is pillow, breath, feet. That's it. There'd be nothing wrong. Wouldn't that be an amazing way to live, really? So what we're doing is, you know, I've mentioned this before, the Anna Isnin quote, we don't see things as they are, we see them as we are. This is all the same thing, all iterations of the Gabor Mate quote, the Nietzsche quote, the Anna Isnin, it's all the same thing. It's very hard to get that because we so believe our stories. No, I know, but I'm the exception here. My life is the exception here. That might be true for most people, but not for me. It's really hard for me, and this is how, and this is why it is. And I can prove it. I can show you. Where the relationship with food comes into this is when we believe that there's a way it should be, this isn't it, someone is to blame, it's usually me, that's an expression of who we take ourselves to be. Our relationship with food stems from the beliefs that we have about ourselves. They are expressions of it or attempts to antidote it, or push it down, numb it, soothe ourselves. There's usually something going on. So you will hear a lot more from me about this, but what I'd like to hear from you right now is three things, incidents or situations that led to you, inspired you to come here. Hi, Arzu. It's great to see you. So, I'll say it again. Three things, three incidents or situations that led you to being here. Now, if I would ask myself that question, if I would say, well, what led me to being here tonight? I would say, well, let's see. I would probably say reading Fat as a Feminist Issue way back in 1978. I would say taking multiple writing workshops with Ellen Bass, my writing teacher, because if I hadn't written any books, you all wouldn't know to come here. And perhaps my trip to India. When I went to India and my world got turned upside down and I realized there was a world beneath the world. There was an invisible world of goodness, of calm, of spaciousness. What people call a spiritual world, the invisible world. That's what I would say. What about you? What are three things? Kathy, you want to start? What are three things? Three things.
What brings me here this round is reconnecting with deeper self-honesty and being able to say what's simply not true as far as the replay, and also having had the direct experience of being at my natural weight with this work in the past. Thank you.
Okay. Three incidents or situations that triggered or inspired you to be here. Okay. Could you say your name?
Hi, I'm Rona.
Hi, Rona.
I would say one of them is realizing how important it is for me to feel like my body is a self-expression of my authenticity. And I've never really felt like I was living in the body that I was sort of given to be able to have in terms of like athletic ability and desire. I think a second incident is just a lot of pain in my growing up situation around food and around body stuff. And then three would be reading your books. When you sit at the refrigerator, pull up a chair is on a very short list I have of books whose title changed my life before even opening it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Lauren?
Well, I guess going all the way back, it was reading Woman, Food, and God and feeling like that's me. And then it was recognizing that I had connecting with my body and recognizing that I have a choice.
Yeah.
And then I guess it's just feeling more alive than I've ever felt.
Thanks, Lauren. Jacqueline?
That's tough for me to even speak out loud right now, so.
Do you want to pass and we'll come back to you?
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks.
Okay. Could everybody say their name first?
My name is Rachel. And the three incidences that bring me here is my first retreat with you really changed my life and changed the way I speak to myself. With more kindness. Second thing is timing and alignment. I've been trying to get here for 2 years. Finally, can make it work. And the third is recognizing that I'm uncomfortable in my body right now and being needed, knowing that I need to do something about it and knowing that I need a catalyst. And I'm here for my catalyst.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jenny. So I think first, I personally and professionally value health and well-being, and so being here is me making that space for myself. Second, I've had a mindfulness meditation practice for 10 or 15 years, and this year, had the first opportunity to do an extended silent retreat, and your work that I had previously engaged with just came up during some of that for me. And then third, just this past year, having an adult sibling who has cancer and being in a caregiver role really brought up childhood experiences of being parentified.
Thank you, Jenny.
Hi, Janine. Leslie.
Hi.
Hi. I've just arrived, literally. Hello, beauties. I'd say the three things that are bringing me here, midlife, menopause, all the things that are coming up, and a chance to unwind and unlearn these behaviors behind my food, eating behaviors. And third is being in this cocoon of love and community. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
I'm Kim, and I would say, looking back, at 9 years old, I thought I had big thighs. So I've always had that relationship with food and eating. So I'd say that's one. Two, I've always been in the inquiry of learning and growing and self-development. So I've done a lot of different courses. And then I read your book in 2010, got what I got at that time. My dad passed away in July of last year after me being caregiver for he and my mom for almost 4 years. And I picked your book up again, and it was like I had never read it before. And I was so on fire about it that in January, I started reading it again and read it about three times, three pages, three times each, and signed up in June. So I'd say I was just so in tune with what it was saying this time around. That'd be my third.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nicole. And a lot of things brought me here, I guess. Many things that I've heard already. I retired from teaching a little over a year ago, and I've been since then just, if something presents itself as an opportunity for growth and learning, I've said yes to it. Having read some of your books, and I'm tired of this, of the battle, and I'm sensing that this is a way through to that. And looking forward to this next phase of my life and this being a way to be more authentic and connected to the world.
Thanks, Nicole.
I'm Cheryl, and the first time I ever saw you was on Oprah in the fall of 2010, and it was the first time I heard you could be kind to yourself. And I, you know, I'm busy with kids, but then I got the replay in the spring of 11. And I went out and got your book, and I read it, and it talked about these retreats. I wonder if she's still doing them. And I was in that May retreat. And I got so much out of that retreat about being kind to myself. And a big part of that was the silence. My husband said, I don't think you can do it. But I not only did it, I loved it. I didn't realize how much energy was going out.
Right.
And I keep coming back because of that, you know, and I've handled so many, you know, mother issues, and I'm just in a much better place and so much kinder to myself. And when I hear the mean voice, I know what to do. I have tools. Yeah, so I don't know if that's two or three or whatever, but that's enough.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
And for me, the three things I would say are, I would start with, I don't have a memory of a time when I wasn't suffering with food, when I didn't feel chubby or like that was a problem that I had to fix. And that sort of parallel universe in my life that's constellated around food and body. And then the therapist who said, read this book. Yeah, I think this book will help. And it was Women, Food, and God. And then coming to retreats and having your voice with me all the time and being, I feel like when people ask me about it, I say it is, it's like being with this brilliant person who has digested all of this information and shares it. So that's it.
Thanks, Jessica. Hi, my name is Jane. And the first thing that brought me here was reading your book, Woman, Food, and God, I guess more than 10 years ago. And the second thing is, not one thing, but the continued, I don't know, they're not incidences, but continued involvement and retreats and online retreats and bridge calls, all that continuation has brought me here. And the last thing is the timing. September's great. I could never come February and August. So that's worked out well. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Angie. And in 2014, I happened to see, it's the first time I had ever heard of you. I came across your book at our local bookstore, and when I picked it up and just looked into it, I'm like, oh my God, this is me, I need to go. And came to a retreat that November and have been coming ever since. It's unbelievable, changed my life in so many ways. And I keep coming back for this, to see the people and the support and just to keep getting to know myself. It's the first time I've ever felt understood and that I could talk to people who knew what I felt and was going through. So thank you.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Rachel. And I too saw you on Oprah, and I remember you, I had already done a lot of kind of non-dieting work, but you used that line or talked about the concept of when you love something, why would you, you know, eat compulsively if you love food, if you say you love food. And I remember, you know, just that really spoke to me. And I also remember an early retreat I went on. Somebody was there who was saying, you know, I had an opportunity to go on a cruise and sort of I'm a little bit grumpy about being here. And you talked about that concept of like, you know, wherever you go, there you are. And yes, you could be anywhere, but you're still stuck with being you. And that really spoke to me. And then I have another sort of formative incident with Loren on a retreat where it was the first time I really felt like I was embodying a mountain. And it was like, oh, you know, there's this whole other way to be. So I think of that as sort of something that keeps me coming back.
Right, another dimension of being mm-hmm. that you embodied and occupied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, beautiful.
My name is Julie. And a nutritionist said, I think you should read Janine's books. I think they'll ring true for you. And I read Women, Food, and God, and that was it. I signed up for a retreat. Maybe before I finished the book. And it spoke it spoke to me because I felt like words were being put to all the puzzle pieces that were floating around. And it's like somebody's getting the words to this and giving it names, and that really helped me. And I'm such a truth seeker. I don't meet many people that want to go as deep as I want to go. And that spoke to me. And I wanted to know myself deeper and understand myself deeper and more and be as authentic as I could.
Thanks, Julie. Hello, I'm Lisa. The first instance that brought me here was when I was 19 or 20, a sophomore in college. I think my sister, who's 5 years older than me, handed me your book, When Food is Love. She and I had been brought up in a home with a lot of food charge and issues, and I'm the baby of five, but she's the next one in age to me. And when I read that, I finally felt understood and read every single book I could get my hand on of yours. So I've read them all many times. And I've always wanted to get my sister Nancy here to a retreat. She lives down the street. We grew up right here. Hope to get her here soon because she is the reason this started. And we talk about this work every time. She's always, I can't believe you're in person with Janine. I can't believe you're on a bridge call. But she has a lot of addiction issues, which she's finally getting over. So maybe it'll happen. And then I saw you on Oprah, and I had two little girls, and I asked my husband, I said, I would do anything. She says she has retreats. Do you think it's a possibility for me to leave for 4 or 5 nights? He is so sweet. He, you know, you should do it, you know, and he saw the change and how much it spoke to me, has been supportive ever since. And then maybe a third instance was my first retreat, just feeling at home, learning about myself, things. I wasn't living my life. I was living the life my dad told me I should be living. So you helped me see that and become aware, and I'm 100%, 1,000% hooked. Thank you.
Hooked on your own gorgeousness, Lisa, your own life.
My name is Angela, and certainly what brought me here, Janine, are your books, and I just can't believe it took me so long to find them, but in my desperate search for answers to my unhealthy relationship with food and how I treated myself, when I started reading your books, there was an opening, and really understanding what that conscious awareness is and the space that I can live in where I don't have to hate myself, and really my eyes being open to how much I was hating myself and treating myself horribly. And once I got on that path, I just wanted more to go deeper and to understand myself more and to show myself more kindness. And I guess I would say to transfer it to other areas in my life as well.
Yeah, thanks, Angela.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nancy. The first thing that led me here was being put on a diet when I was 10 years old and being sent to birthday parties with diet ice cream. And just starting that journey of something's wrong with me. And that was all part of growing up in a house with food issues. And then the next thing that led me here was reading When Food is Love in 1992, right after I graduated from college. And then I think the third thing that's led me here is my experience with life currently, being a mom and a stepmom of 6 adult children, and just learning to live a life with lots of other adults who all have their own issues that they all grew up with, and seeing that all of us have a story about ourselves, and we're all believing these stories, and just like watching, observing what's happening in my life and my household with forgiveness or non-forgiveness, and receiving your emails each week, and watching, you mentioned that the tone of the retreats has changed, and my thinking about life has changed kind of in a parallel way to it, and the timing was just, the tone and the timing were both perfect.
Thank you, Nancy.
Hi, I'm Amy. My first instance is when I was in the fifth grade, and I remember coming home from a family vacation. We had been on a cruise to Mexico, and my dad said, well, we all need to go on a diet, except for Amber, who is my younger sister, who was very thin. And that was the first moment I had that I was like, wow, something's wrong. Like, something's wrong. It was just a really shocking. I felt shocked. So that's my earliest. My next instance is when I saw you first in, I think it was early 2000s in Redwood City, and you were doing the exercise with the Hershey Kiss and the raisin. And that was very life-changing to me, because I was sitting there like, oh, how are we going to eat this Hershey Kiss so slow and focus on it? And it was great. It was so, and then now currently what brings me back is eating while standing at the counter. I hate it, and I continue to struggle with it, and I want to be done with it. So thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
My name is Karen, and I think I got one of your books. I found it in Barnes & Noble when I first moved to the United States, and this was over 20 years ago, and I didn't read it. I put it on my bookshelf, and then life happened, and I didn't read it, and one day I gave it away. And recently, I was organizing my whole house and organized my bookshelf again, and something came to me and said that, like, I think you've missed something. So I went and got it again, and this time I did read it, and then something clicked. Something said to me that this has to be the right way. There's just no other way right now. After having been on a very, very long, like, roller coaster of like eating patterns and everything, it somehow clicked, and I know that I have a lot to learn. So I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, Karen. Arzu.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Arzu. I'll just talk about what brought me here this time.
Yes, good.
I have experienced a lot of losses lately, and I thought that the in-persons were completely over, but when I got the email about in-person, I thought this might be, who knows, my last chance to see you and Lorraine in person. So that's what brought me here this time.
Thanks, Arzu. Hello,
hi,
Gina.
Hi, how are you? I don't know, the best things that happens to me, I never realize when they happen, so I don't remember when I hear from you, when it was, but those are the best ones that I don't remember how they happen, and that was a good one. I remember the key chocolate. I met you the first time in person in that moment where the chocolate, the key is chocolate. And because I was casting you, I was like, I will go and see
what
it will be. And then I fell in love, and I said, from there to to forever. And then I was signed up for before COVID, and it was canceled. And since then, I haven't seen you in person. So I've been missing you. I miss the people that align with my soul and my vibration, and I was missing you. That was an important thing for that. And in 2023, I finally start to practice, really practicing letting go the story about myself. Really, really practicing it, because I'm still. But I wrote about it, and I was something magical start to happen, because I really feel it in my heart that it was nice to be here in life, not excusing myself or trying to explain my worthiness.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons. The second one was because I was missing you, and when I really had the chance, I am here, and I will follow you wherever you go. If you let us, I will go after you. And the other one is that my daughter, she's starting here in, not here, in Boston. I left her 1 week ago, and there is this hole in my spirit and my soul, and I will take the opportunity to come back again to myself, because I feel lonely without her, and this is the kind of grieving that it's sad, and there is sadness and happiness in the same time, because this is a kind of love that you give, that I need to give her in some way. So I'm really happy to be here next to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
Hi, I'm Leslie. I guess I can't remember the first instance that I discovered you, but it was many, many years ago. And I've somehow been on your lists and keep getting your emails and occasionally sit on webinars and such, but you have grown so much spiritually, and it really appeals to me where you're at right now with all this just really resonates with me, because I understand that it's not just about food. I guess the second thing is like really practical. I'm not good at deciphering what to eat. I feel guilty about just about everything. I'm even seeing a nutritionist now, and even with following what I'm supposed to do, I still find myself feeling guilty, and it just drives me nuts, and I have to get over that. And third thing is what you were talking about in this latest webinar about self-rejection, because that's I see that that's at the core of this whole thing. So that's been going on forever, and it hasn't gotten easier as I've gotten older, because you know the body gets old and it just doesn't look the way it did and never will again. So I just need to let go of all that shit. Mm. That's why I'm here.
Thank you, Leslie. Hi, Grace.
Hi, I'm Grace. I'm here because I read Women, Food, and God last year, and I got the kind of, I want to say, respite from the self-hatred and the craziness, the war in me, which I'd never felt before. I'm a psychotherapist by training. I don't practice, but I trained as a psychotherapist over 10 years ago, and I've done lots of therapy and stuff, and nothing touched me the way that Women, Food, and God touched me. I think the other The other reasons that bring me here are memories, the incidences certainly relate to another speaker being a child and thinking how much bigger my thighs were than other girls in my preschool. Like, how does that happen? And also from such things as my mother telling me that I shouldn't be fat as a child. If I was fat, no one would love me. So it would be good to unpack a lot of that. And, hey, I'm fat, and someone does love me very much.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm Joyce. I'm Joyce, and I think the first time was your book, When Food is Love. The second would be probably just years of that feeling and something there that's unattainable or just feels large that I haven't expressed. And recently in my, I have a group at home, Hunger, Hope, and Healing, I've touched into the sadness around that and feeling like I think I can walk through this and realize this. And the third was a conversation with my doctor saying, I want you to, you know, consider GLP-1 drugs. And inside me, a part of me is holding out hope that I think there's another way. So, yeah.
Good. All right. Well, so here we are. Thank you. Jacqueline, you're looking down. Do you want to speak? Okay, good. Where's the microphone? Thank you, Joyce.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline. And like most people have said in this room, the book brought me here. I resonated with that. What keeps me coming back is you, your words. And why I'm here now is because I need more kindness.
Because?
Of kindness.
I
need more kindness.
Yes. Right. Yeah, good. Yes. You know, I think it's so hard to really, really, really get, at least it has been for me, that all we ever experience of what looks like the world is who we're being to ourselves. I would say that's one of the hardest things to really get. That when we see, I say this a lot, when we, or that we see the world as our wounds are, there's no other way. There's just no other way to see the world. Except the way we do. And the way we do has to do with certain, I'll call them installations, that mostly happened before we could speak. Mostly happened before we can speak. But certainly by the time we were 4 years old. That what we believed, like in kindergarten, if our mothers didn't pick us up on time, or if somebody told us we were too fat, or we didn't get fed on time as babies, because we so need the external to reflect ourselves. Kids always feel like that. There is no other way. When the external reflects that something is wrong, you're not enough, or when we interpret, if my mother doesn't pick me up on time, and I interpret that to mean I don't matter, that's what I then see the world through. And it's elemental. We all have a basket of conclusions. I don't matter. I'm not enough. I'm ugly. Something is wrong with me. I'll never get it. I can't make the mark. I'm a failure no matter what I do. My existence, I have no impact. My existence doesn't matter. Those things are so unbearable that we push them down. We develop, and I'll talk a lot more about this because we're going to go into an opening visualization pretty soon. We push them down because they're unbearable. We develop what I call adaptive behaviors to make up for that, being nice, saying yes when we mean no, trying to matter. I became incredibly bossy, feeling I became utterly hypervigilant. The world that I was growing up in was so chaotic. It was such a mess. Two parents who might have felt some modicum of love for each other but didn't know how to because they were both babies themselves, very wounded babies. And I think I must have looked around a 26-hour birth. I'm not quite sure I really ever wanted to come out, but then I did come out and I took a look around. It was like, I think I'd like to go back, please. The chaos and the pain and the cruelty was so intense that it was also so unbearable, and I took it to mean something about me. And the way to titrate it or avoid it was to try to manage it. I became very good. I was remembering the other day when I was in camp, we did this show, Little Abner, and the director, the social director, Bob Seiden, said, "Who's the bossiest person you know, girl you know?" And it was me. And I got to play Mammy Yoakum, which I didn't do a good job at because I could boss everybody around, but I was a terrible actress. And so, and also a terrible singer. And I had to sing and act. But I started really believing in control. I could control everything. I could control it. I could control myself. And the more that I felt like it was all up to me, I could do it. I could make my father happy by lying to him about where my mother was. I could make my mother happy, but I actually could never make my mother happy. And I actually could never make my father happy. So it was total lies that a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old could manage a chaotic family. But I grew up believing that I could manipulate and control, and everything was up to me. It was really a burden. And I have carried it for quite a long time. I've been unable to boss my husband around, as he often says to me, "Go tell somebody who's paying you for it. Don't talk to me about that." If I talk to him about food, it's like, I'm writing a book, I've told you all this, Breaking Free from Janine Roth. So I've been unsuccessful in my attempts to boss him around, which doesn't mean that I don't try. But I know it doesn't work, and I've just had to, in many, many different layers, because this is an unlayering process. This doesn't happen at once, to feel the heartbreak I felt as a kid. Before I could talk, I was heartbroken. Just heartbroken about what was going on and how I interpreted what was going on. And I kept failing, really, to make the situation better. There wasn't any way I could make it better, but I kept trying and I kept failing, and I kept believing that the fact that I was failing was because I wasn't trying hard enough, so I would try harder. And none of it really worked. I always felt like whatever decision I made was the wrong decision, because if only I had made the other decision, things would have worked out differently. So again, it was up to me. And I kept doing the wrong thing, because it never did work out like that. Nothing ever could erase the heartbreak until I allowed it. So I didn't know how to be on my own side. I didn't know how that being on my own side meant allowing what was going on. I didn't understand that I saw the world as my wounds were, that all I ever experienced of anything was how I was being to myself or who I was being to myself, and who I was being was unkind. So it took me a long time. I never really liked the whole thing of the law of attraction and the secret and you create your own reality. But I understood in the last couple of years the much deeper dimension of that. Not that if I wished for a red Maserati in my driveway, a red Maserati would show up, but that the reality I saw was the one I believed was true and real. And it went back and forth between being a wounded reality, a shit show, and the other end of the stick, because you always get both ends of the stick, the wounds, and then sometimes it's really great. But then it always goes back, so that I felt constantly like I was at risk, because I knew that the good stuff would only last so long and then it would turn to the bad stuff, whatever that was. So the work we've been doing in the last many years, I would say the last 4 years, maybe 5 years, has been to get to the bottom of it, to how we see the world, to understanding, and you know that Wayne Dyer quote, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. I said this on the Ending Self-Rejection call, or maybe I said it on our bridge call the other night, if we had a bridge call the other night. I don't even remember if we did or not. I always wanted to know, but if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, but how do you change the way you look at things? How do you do that? It's easy to say, I am whole, I am present, I am kind, I am good, and that's just, as I've said many times, putting sugar on shit. Because if you really believe that you're not, if when you scratch away the surface you believe that you're damaged and helpless and hopeless, which I believed, I've told all of you who have known me for a long time many times that when my best friend stopped, really ended our relationship by ghosting me when I got back from radiation from breast cancer, I told no one, not even Matt, because I believed that she was seeing something in me that was true and that I had pulled the wool over his eyes for over 30 years. And somehow, if he knew what she knew, then he would leave me. That's how damaged I still believed I was, that I didn't even realize I believed I was. You know, my editor has recently said to me, as I've been writing this book, which is coming out April 21st, and is called Love Finally, Untangling the Knot Between Mothers, Daughters, and Food. And it was a deep dive into my relationship with my mother, places I never wanted to go or never expected to go, but knew I needed to if she's going to be 97. I didn't want to die being angry at her. And just having her say hello to me trigger me off. All she had to do, hello, and I would be, I hate you. I mean, I didn't say that, but I felt my heart close. It was the closing of my heart that was so uncomfortable to me. And my editor, so I wrote about, it's a kind of double-threaded narrative of my relationship with my mother, early experiences, conversation, like it's a memoir, really. And then meeting this lovely teacher, woman, 86-year-old blind woman in Hawaii that I've been working with, that I worked with quite intensely for a couple of years, and realizing there was a whole other dimension of being alive that I was missing. And so my editor kept saying, but how could you feel so bad about yourself? You were on Oprah. You had all these best-selling books. You did this. You did that. You did this. You did that. You don't look like that. You don't, you know, you have, you're married to somebody you love who loves you. You live a lovely life. I just don't get it, is what she'd say to me all the time. And I'd say to her, everybody feels like this. And if they don't say it, they're pretending. Because unless you really look at your basket of conclusions, what you believe about yourself, you're projecting it out there, and it's the world looks like a mess. And then you wonder why so many painful things happen to you, because that's the other part of it, that what you put out, even though you don't know you're putting it out in terms of your wounds, you get back, is reflected in every relationship, or almost, that you have. Certainly with my friendship with my friend Christine. I saw, and then we will do the visualization, as I wrote this book, that I kept feeling on an unconscious and unspoken level that I was damaged and mean and selfish, and that these lovely women are, and in the book I recount two stories of two best friends. Both of those relationships did not end well. That I saw that if somebody I idealized loved me, it must mean I was good. But what I didn't see was that I believed that I was so damaged on a level that I never realized I believed, that I needed to be around people who I, you know, idealized, like my friend Christine and my friend Sharon, that they could take care of it. But when those relationships ended, particularly with Christine after the radiation, that was the deep dive. That's what really started me off on, all right, time to deal with stuff I haven't dealt with ever, and I don't want to. And what I can tell you is that at least this body-mind vehicle is no longer dependent on external circumstances or people for happiness. Not that I don't feel a lot of love or love the people I'm with, but there's a way I understand that my happiness doesn't depend on anybody or anything else. Nothing else. if Matt died tomorrow or next week, would I be grief-stricken? Yes. Would I believe, as I used to believe about my dad dying, that it would be like falling on a cliff and getting speared and dying and shattered? No. So a lightness and a spaciousness and well-being, happiness, is the general state now, which I know is possible for everyone because that's who we are when we're not occluding it with our stories about how awful it is and how awful we are. So that's the promise. Because why is it the promise? It's the promise of reclaiming, so to speak, our true nature. And I use this analogy, and I had to stop using it in the book, of taking off the yellow glasses that we've been looking through. Because when you look at the world through yellow glasses, the world looks yellow. When you take off the glasses, the world isn't yellow anymore. When you stop seeing through the wounds, then things just are as they are. The wind, the noise of the air conditioner in this room, the other people sitting in this room, the plain old simplicity of being alive without the stories we impose on it. So let's take some long, deep breaths in and let them out. We're going to do an opening visualization. How's everybody's energy in terms of, on a scale of 1 to 10? I'm just wondering about doing this opening visualization tomorrow morning. I just wanted to check in with you energetically. How are you doing? Are you tired? Is it time to go to sleep? Okay, then. We're not going to do that. We're going to do the opening visualization, even though this is the opening. We'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow morning. It's past my bedtime, too, by the way. Actually, not really. It's 10 to 7, so... I'll read you a little poem and then we will Maybe I'll read that to you tomorrow too. And just leave you with a Pretty Mary Oliver poem to drift off into the night. The country of the mockingbird is where I now want to be. Thank you. Yes. The days when the snow-white swans might pass over the dunes are the days I want to eat now, slowly and carefully and with gratitude. Thank you. The hours fresh and tidal are the hours I want to hold in the palm of my hand. Thank you. Yes. Such grace. Thank you. The gate I want to open now is the one that leads into the flower bed of my heart. Thank you. Yes. Every day, the slow, fresh wind. Thank you. Yes. The wing in the dark that touches me. Thank you. Yes. Yes. So saying yes. Saying yes. Allowing what's ever here to be here. If it's tears, if it's contraction, regardless of what it is, just allowing it, everything comes to pass. Everything comes to pass. If you don't resist it, which leads to suffering every single time, if you don't resist it, it passes. Everything comes to pass. All right, everybody, let's take just a moment of silence together. If you feel to, you can put your index finger and middle finger on that center point of your heart, and then feel that heart like there were two fingers on the other side pushing back, meeting you, your heart, your gorgeous, gorgeous heart. Thanking yourself for showing up here, for coming here, for being amongst company. Sangha is the word for truth community, for being in a truth community where what matters most to you also matters here. To be fully alive. To be kind to yourself. To be on your own side, on your own behalf. That's what coming here was. That's what it was. You did that. Allow yourself to feel that and to thank yourself for that. All right, everybody. I'm going to leave, and so will you. You'll sit for another minute. I'm just going to walk out very slowly here.